It's crazy how much stuff we have going on here at the Sports Fluent Network. We've just added 10 new podcasts covering the NBA, the NFL, pro wrestling. Everything you want in sports is here. Just check out sportsfluent.com for all the details. Plus, this week on Sports Fluent, we're talking NFL Week 12, the good, the bad, and the ugly. We're going to take a walk through the NBA. As the season is set to kick off in the next 3 weeks, we're going to talk about some of the offseason moves and the Christmas Day schedule that's just been released. Also, we're going to give you a sneak peek into the newest show on the Sports Fluent Network, and that's Conspiracy. The first incident is Michael Jordan's first retirement. Was it truly a retirement? Or was it a suspension? All that coming up now on Sports Fluent. Week 12 in the NFL was another great one. We dive into the good, the bad, and the ugly. And as always, let's start with the positive, the good. And this week, I'm surprised to tell you, the first one is the Miami Dolphins. Yeah, those Miami Dolphins. Coach Flores has done a fantastic job. There was a lot of uncertainty about what kind of team the Dolphins would be heading into this season, but at 7-4, they're right in the thick of the playoffs, and they're looking really good, especially on defense. They're a really good defensive team that can beat anyone in the NFL. The biggest question mark for me coming in was going to be the play of the quarterback. They had Ryan Fitzpatrick. They had obviously drafted Tua. And what was that going to look like? Fitzpatrick historically started off really well, put up some good numbers, but then had a bit of a drop-off. Well, this season, Fitzpatrick came out. They were winning some games. And then they made the really surprising move to flip over to Tua. And then in the middle of the game, Tua, granted, wasn't looking that great. They went back to Fitzpatrick and they haven't missed a beat. And it's really interesting because the team is built around such good defense. Their running game has been a huge question mark between Gaskins and Ahmed and Beretta. Like you don't even know who's going to be playing running back week to week. We're pretty sure we know who the quarterback is, I think, in Fitzpatrick. But they've still found a way to win games, and that's what matters. So I got to tip my hat to Coach Flores because it's got to be him, right? So great job so far, Miami Dolphins. The next one is another surprise team. It's the Washington football team. This offseason, like most in Washington, was kind of a crazy one. New head coach, allegations about the head office, a team with no name. And yet they've found a way, and don't get me wrong, they're 4-7. It's not like they're fantastic. But at the same time, they've been playing really well as of late. And it's another team that has been really focused on defense, and that's what's winning them their games. Alex Smith has not looked like the old Alex Smith, but I'm really happy to see him playing well, obviously enough to win. And he's looking more and more comfortable every week. But at 4-7, they're right in the mix in that NFC East. They have as good a chance as anyone to win that division. The Cowboys are a huge question mark. The Eagles are a huge question mark. Depending on the injury to Daniel Jones, the Giants are a huge question mark. So Washington actually not only has a chance to be in the playoffs, they have a chance to win their division and host a playoff game. How incredible is that? The sad part is when we talk about the good, we got to talk about the bad. There's the yin and the yang, and we got to cover both. And the first bad of this week is a five-parter because O'Brien, Quinn, Patricia, Nagy, Gase are five coaches that three of which have already been fired, and the other two probably should. their teams have looked much better, the three that have been fired, since they were fired. The Bears and Coach Nagy look horrible. And the Jets under Gase over the last few seasons have been, over the last two seasons, have been 7-20. If there wasn't a reason to fire a coach, that's got to be it, right? They look really bad. And the coaching decisions that they've made, the plays that they've called, have been even worse. And it's something that it doesn't seem to be changing. There's probably another half a dozen coaches who aren't doing a very good job. You can look just to Philadelphia, right, with Peterson calling the plays and not making the move with Wentz. And we'll get to that in a minute. But these coaching decisions, this coaching, you know, their ability to prepare for games this season, there's way too many of them that have been bad. Maybe it's a time that we have the owners, the general managers, you know, take a better look at what's going on at the coaching level, because I think there's a lot of room for improvement there. Speaking of Coach Nagy, that's my other bad. Because when Nick Foles got hurt, I said, here's an opportunity for the Bears to look at that offense and really, you know, flip it on its head, right? They've proven this year that they cannot be a team that throws the ball 45 to 50 times and expect to win. No offense to Foles, a little offense to Trubisky. They're just not capable of throwing the ball that much and expecting to win. They're just not that good of a quarterback. They're not that type of quarterback. And I thought bringing Trubisky back, granted because of an injury, they could get back to what actually is going to win them football games. A good defense. And let's get this straight. The defense could be great, but it's on the field too much and they're too tired. And, you know, there's some infighting, I think, happening there because they're just exhausted. So they're not great because they're so tired. They're good. But a good defense and a re-established running game, whether it's Cordell Patterson, obviously they got Montgomery back, and Mitch Trubisky can't run the ball. So between those kind of options, you know, Coach Nagy, I don't think he forgot how to run an offense. If they went back to that run game, there's a great opportunity for them to get back into, you know, the playoff hunt. Don't forget, this was a team that was probably the worst 5-1 team you've ever seen, but they were still 5-1. And even at 5-5, a win against the Packers put them one game out of the top spot in the NFC North and right in the hunt for a playoff spot. But what did they do? Did they run the ball 25, 30 times, focus on their defense, try to slow down the game, knowing that they probably couldn't match Green Bay's offense throw for throw? No, what they did was they threw the ball 46 times. Now, I get it. Part of that was because they were down early. But that's what happens when you're 3-0, throw two interceptions, and lose a fumble from your quarterback position. The funny part is they were having success running the ball. Granted, you know, Montgomery had one 50-yard run, which probably padded his stats a little bit, but he ran the ball 11 times for over 100 yards. But they threw the ball 46 times. It doesn't make sense. 46 total plays, 46 passing plays to 16 running plays. They were having success running the ball. They don't have a good offensive line. They need to establish a run so that they can have some play action, which, by the way, is the absolute strength of Nick Foles, but they're never getting to do that because they never run the ball. They're the 31st offense in the league. 31st. That's bad. And now we're hearing reports that the wide receivers, and not just Allen Robinson about his contract, but the other wide receivers are saying not the most flattering things about the Bears offense. In fact, one of the wide receivers liked a tweet that said, Chicago, it's where wide receivers go to die. So obviously some problems in Chicago this week. They're bad. I know what you're thinking. The bad was pretty ugly. But it wasn't as ugly as the ugly. And we've got some great ones for you this week. The first one, and it's, you know, it is their fault and it's not their fault. But the Denver Broncos, 1 for 9, 13 yards passing for an entire game. Now, granted, it's because they didn't have a quarterback. Why didn't they have a quarterback, you ask? Because the three quarterbacks that they did have on the roster decided, hey, you know what? We don't believe in COVID, and we're not going to wear our masks. And guess what? They all got it. And they all got it, and it hurt them. It hurt their team. It hurt their teammates. And it hurt the NFL. And that's why they got smoked by New Orleans. Now, look, they probably would have lost to New Orleans anyways. However, leaving your team to bring a wide receiver off the practice squad to be your starting quarterback is not a good teammate. Forget everything else. Forget what they actually, I don't care what they believe. Here's the reality. COVID's a real thing. And if you get it, you can't play. And if you don't wear a mask and the others don't wear masks, you're going to spread it to your teammates. That's not being a good teammate. Flat, plain, simple. I really don't care if you like it, don't like it. You're an anti-masker. I don't care. You're part of a team and your responsibility is to that team. And part of that responsibility is to make sure that you don't get this and that you don't spread it to your teammates. So shame on you, Broncos. You're the first ugly this week. The second one, and I feel like we could have this conversation around this time every year because they seem to do it every year. If I told you an opposing team had 185 passing yards, their top rusher had 65 yards, and their top receiver had 50 yards, would you guess that they won or lost that game? In most instances, you'd say, well, 185 passing yards, 65. They probably won that game, right? They, or at least they were close in that game. But the Raiders found a way to allow only 185 passing yards, allow the top rusher to only get 65 yards, and the top receiver to only get 50 yards, and still lose a game 43-6. That's ugly. And I don't know what happens to the Raiders once a year because they did the same thing last year to the Jets. They just play an ugly game. So I guess we chalk it up as this year's ugly game for the Raiders, who were looking so good, right? They played so well against Kansas City, although they lost. You know, they had a big win earlier in the season. They're looking like a good team, much, much improved. But Derek Carr looked horrible. And the Raiders get the ugly number two. The third one, I was going to pick on the Jets, but I think it's too easy to pick on the Jets. And we already talked about, you know, Gase and his 7-20 record and how he should be gone, but it's too easy. So we're going to skip the Jets this week. We're going to leave the Jets. We're going to leave them off the ugly. And we're going to move to one that I alluded to earlier, and that's the Philadelphia Eagles. And I think it maybe bothers me more for two reasons. One, my six-year-old is an Eagles fan. I can't change his mind. He loves them. So it hurts. Two is that I picked them to win this division this year. I thought this was the year Carson Wentz looked healthy. They were going to find a way. And in that division where I thought Washington was horrible, I believe that the Giants weren't going to be very good. I believe Dallas was going to be their up and down, Dallas selves, that for the first time in a long time, there'd be a back-to-back NFC East winner, and it was going to be the Eagles. They look terrible. And not only do they look terrible because of Carson Wentz. And that's really the surprise because we thought, here's a good quarterback who, you know, if he could just stay healthy, he'd be fine. But he's healthy and he doesn't look good. And I think the stubbornness of Peterson, of Coach Peterson, to continue to call plays, which aren't working, to continue to leave Wentz in there and it's not working, needs to change. And the argument for keeping Wentz in that I've heard a couple of times is, well, they're in the playoff hunt, so they got to keep. No, they're in the playoff hunt because that division is terrible. They're in that playoff hunt because the top team has only won 4 games in that division. They're not really in the playoff hunt. They're in that division hunt because all of them are below 500. But Wentz isn't working. Would it hurt? Now, maybe they know something I don't know, but, you know, in practice about Jalen Hurts. But would it hurt them that much to put him in and see what they have, right? Could he play worse? Could that offense be worse than what it's doing under Wentz, right? You're basically telling the team, we're okay with mediocrity. But the reality is, if it was any other position, Wentz would be on the bench by now, right? If Wentz was a running back playing this way, if Wentz was a linebacker playing this way, he'd be sitting on the bench. But because he's a quarterback that's getting paid too much money, he's playing. Well, it's time that we change that. Let's put in Jalen Hurts. And, right? Hey, I could be wrong. He could go in and throw, you know, 5-6 interceptions. He could be Nathan Peterman reincarnated. Could be. But he also could give that team a shot in the arm. It could give them a spark that they need to really push forward. It could be the, hey, and I don't know, I'm guessing here, you're working hard in practice. We're struggling. We're going to make a change. And just be that motivation that the team needs, because the reality is they still can win this division. So let's see what they do moving forward. But that's your ugly for this week. Next up, we're talking NBA. But before we dive into the Christmas Day games, let me remind you to check out sportsfluent.com, The GOAT Chronicles. So far, we've got the first four parts up, and we've talked about the competition, stats, awards, and accolades, all available on the blog post, sportsfluent.com. Let's get to the Christmas games. So they've, I think, I don't know if they were supposed to release this, but looks like it slipped out. And we have the five games that apparently we're going to see on Christmas Day. Now, I told you in the last episode, right, the reason they were bringing back, starting the league on December 22nd was because of the TV deal, because of that Christmas Day takeover, and they've put together what they think to be a good slate of games. And I don't think they're necessarily wrong. I do have a couple of question marks, however. So the first game is Pelicans and Heat. Obviously, they're going to try to get Zion Williamson as much prime time exposure as possible. He's the next big thing, to steal a line from Paul Heyman. And he's playing up, you know, against the Heat, who were in the finals last year. Jimmy Butler, Goran Dragic is back. The Heat should look really good this year as well. I think they're going to have another good year. So that should be a nice game. Warriors and Bucks. So interesting one there, especially with the rumors flying around that the Warriors are trying to make a move for Giannis this offseason if he doesn't sign his Supermax. You know, the revamped Warriors, if they don't make any trades, right? Obviously, they lost Klay Thompson again, which is unfortunate, but they still have Steph Curry, Andrew Wiggins, Draymond Green, and we're going to get to see Wiseman. And then obviously we're going to see the revamped Bucks. Obviously Giannis is there with Middleton and Drew Holiday. Obviously their new acquisition. Obviously Bogdanovich didn't work out, and he ended up in Atlanta. But the Bucks still are going to be one of the top, you know, 3-4 teams in the East. So another good matchup. Then we have the Nets and Celtics. These are probably the two teams that most are expecting to be the one and maybe three seed this year. I think the Bucks are probably the number two seed, but everyone's expecting the Nets to just jive with KD and Kyrie and their supporting cast. This team, talent-wise, should be the top seed if they can play together, if they can stay healthy. And then obviously against the young, can we still call them the young Celtics? Yeah, I think they're still young enough with Jason Tatum and others. Again, also going to be a very solid team this year. Mavs and Lakers was an interesting one because I thought they'd do the Battle of LA Clippers-Lakers, and they didn't. They went with the Luka, right, versus LeBron, the 6'9 point guard versus the 6'10 point guard, the young versus old. So I think that's actually going to be a really good game too. I think some people are still kind of sleeping on the Cavs and Luka, which is surprising considering what a great player he's already become. And then the last game, Clippers Nuggets, right? So obviously the team that knocked out the Clippers came back from 3-1. This is their chance at revenge, although this is going to look like a very different Clipper team. Obviously, Harrell is gone. Ibaka is in. I'm sure there's still some tweaking to the roster. Doc Rivers is out. So it's a bit of a different Clipper team, but should be good to see them match up against the Nuggets. And as always, the Tampa Bay Raptors, Toronto Raptors, well, I guess the Tampa Bay Raptors, are not playing on Christmas Day. Let's stay in the NBA and talk about some offseason moves that have happened and some that we're still talking about. So we're going to go right to the defending champs. We're going to start with the Los Angeles Lakers and their offseason moves. So in is Schroeder, Harrell, Matthews, and Gasol. Out are Rondo, Dwight, and Green. Now, we know there's probably still some tweaking to everybody's roster that's still probably going to happen, but let's just look at the impact of those kind of top three, four players that are in and out for the Lakers. You still have LeBron and AD, so you're still going to be competing for a championship. Is Schroeder an upgrade from Rondo? Well, he's definitely younger. He's a good defender. Is he a Rondo? Like, is there, like, I'm comparing him now to playoff Rondo, right? Let's be real. Like, I'm less concerned with what happens in the regular season, although it's important for seeding, etc. We're talking playoffs. So is he as good as defensively as playoff Rondo? Probably not, but he's a good defender. Last year, though, the big thing was he took a huge jump in three-point shooting. I believe his three-point shooting took an 8 or 9% jump in terms of three-point shooting percentage of three-pointers made. Can he keep that up, or was that the anomaly? Was that the exception to the rule? If he can, his defense that's not as good as Rondo, or playmaking that's not as good as Rondo, it will more than make up for it with his three-point shooting, right? That's the thing we've talked about. I've talked about LeBron since his rookie season. You know, with guys like LeBron, Giannis, Ben Simmons even, they need to have good, really good three-point shooting to give them the space that they need to do so that they can do what they do best. And I think, like I said, if Schroeder can repeat what he did last year, that's going to be a huge benefit. So anything that they lose on the defensive end, it will more than make up for on the offensive end. Then we're moving Dwight Howard out, and we're bringing in from the Clippers, Harrell. And I think that's, look, I think that's an upgrade in the sense that he's now, is he going to be coming off the bench or starting? That's going to be something that remains to be seen, right? He's not necessarily a center. We know that AD wants to play power forward, although they're the most effective when he plays center. So hopefully Frank Vogel can convince him to do that. But I think he's an upgrade over Dwight Howard, who, you know, played his role very well last year, right? Probably exceeded expectations in terms of his ability to take a step back and really play his role. I don't think he can do it 2 years in a row, and I think that's why he's gone. And then Matthews and Danny Green. Career-wise, Danny Green was probably a better three-point shooter. Everyone's going to give him a really hard time about that one big miss in the finals. But I think Wesley Matthews gives them what Danny Green gives them, if not better. So I think that's an upgrade for the Lakers as well. And again, him and Schroeder, right? Back to the spacing of the floor. They're going to have wide open threes. As long as they can make them, they're really going to space out the floor next year. I think they're improved. And the last one, and I threw him in, I really only wanted to talk about the top three in and out, but I'm adding in Marc Gasol. And I'm adding in Marc Gasol for a couple of reasons. One, he is not the Marc Gasol that you know and love. He's not. His three-point shooting took a huge decline last year. He's a much older, slower than he was. You know, he's not the same defensive player that he was the year that he stole the Defensive Player of the Year award from LeBron, as LeBron puts it. I believe LeBron was quoted this week as saying he's happy to talk to Marc Gasol now that he's on the team, because he has his Defensive Player of the Year award sitting in his house. So I thought that was interesting. However, he does bring something to this Lakers team, right? This veteran defensive IQ. his body might not be able to get to the spot as quickly as it once did, but he's going to be someone who's going to be very vocal, and he's going to help Anthony Davis and Harrell and the other bigs on the Lakers be in the right position defensively. And if this Laker team can play solid defense, which I believe they will, with this offense that now I think is more more suited for the way that LeBron James plays, this team has the best shot at repeating that we've seen in a very long time, even in that tough Western division. So I give them a for offseason moves. And yes, the defending champs have gotten better. Now to the NBA moves that haven't happened, but still might. And we're going to start in Houston, where Harden and Westbrook are still on the Houston Rockets. Weren't they both demanding trades and both going to get shipped off? Wasn't Harden going to the Nets? It looks like all the rumors and all the so-called experts called that one wrong, because as of right now, they're still both in Houston. In fact, they've made a couple of moves to try and improve the roster. They took a chance on Cousins. They made that trade where we thought, you know, they were shipping off. They brought in Ariza, but then they flipped him. And the Rockets are, I don't know if they're trying to retool the team to convince Harden and Westbrook to stay. Are there just no takers for Harden or Westbrook? Are they asking too much? So we'll see how that one pans out. The latest one is Harden to the Warriors. Now, it makes sense for the Warriors, now that Klay Thompson is going to miss the season, if they can, you know, is it a Wiseman-Wiggins for Harden trade? Obviously, Wiggins is part of it, or do they take someone else? Can they keep Wiseman? We'll see. It'd be interesting to see Steph Curry and James Harden on the same court at the same time and what that looks like. They, you know, they probably just have a half-court shooting contest any given quarter. I think it would be interesting to see. I don't think it makes the Warriors a better team, though. I'll be honest. I think there's better suited teams for Harden, although, like I said, I think it would be really fun to watch. The other ones are a lot of speculation. Was Victor Oladipo was demanding a trade. He's now come out and said, I never said I wanted a trade. I never said I didn't want to play in Indiana. So I would bet all the money I have that that means he has asked for a trade and he does want out of Indiana. So we'll see. There was obviously a lot of talk. I guess he was caught on tape at a game, you know, asking the Raptors if he could come and play with them. You know, maybe that still happens. I think the Raptors haven't had a good offseason. Obviously losing Gasol, which I thought should have happened anyways. Like I said before, I think he's kind of on his last legs. But losing Serge, I think, was tough. I think, you know, they did make Fred VanVleet a priority. But I think starting two point guards, right? VanVleet is really a point guard with Kyle Lowry and then Siakam and OG. They need a player, right? They need another player. They need a scorer. And Victor Oladipo could be that guy. So we'll see how that pans out. The other name we hear quite a bit is Bradley Beal. He has said, I don't want to go to another team. Publicly, we've heard him. He wants to be in Washington. He wants to bring players there. He wants to win there. But obviously, there's a lot of speculation. And the biggest one is if Giannis were to sign a Supermax and stay in Milwaukee, that would be the Heat's kind of second option to pair with Jimmy Butler down there in Miami. And of course, as I just mentioned, a lot of that is going to hinge on Giannis. And does he sign that Supermax in Milwaukee? I think I would have put it at a 25% chance that he was going to re-sign. And then when they made the moves for Holiday and Bogdanovich, I moved that up to 85, 90%. Then when that deal fell through with Sacramento for Bogdanovich and he went to Atlanta, now I've dropped it to 50-50. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Giannis and the Bucks and how that affects the landscape of the rest of the NBA. Now for the fix. This might be the quickest episode of the fix because we want to get to a preview of the newest segments that are going to be on sportsfluent.com. which is called Conspiracy. We'll give you little bits and pieces of it every week on this show, but head over to sportsfluent.com to read the full article on Conspiracy. So to the fix, and we talked about the Chicago Bears in the bad, and we talked about their 31st ranked offense. But I think we all can agree Nick Foles, Mitch Trubisky are really the main reason, although I believe play calling, lack of a run game, lack of an offensive line are also playing big factors in the Bears' inability on the offensive end. But let me run you through and tell you why the fix for the Chicago Bears isn't the coach, it's the GM. Because Ryan Pace has not identified a good quarterback in his entire tenure as the Bears GM. As you know, he was enamored with Marcus Mariota. We saw where he is right now. He paid money for Mike Glennon. We see what he's doing. He obviously made a huge draft day deal to move up one spot for Mitch Trubisky. And this offseason, he brought in the huge contract of Nick Foles. But I'm not going to totally blame just Ryan Pace, although his job is to bring in a quarterback, a franchise quarterback, and he's been unable to do that. In just the last 5 years, if I go back 10 or 20, it gets even scarier. But in the last 5 years, here are the names. Okay, and don't just look at the number. Yeah, there's eight of them in 5 years, which isn't ideal. There's some teams that have more, a lot of teams that have had less. But let me just run you through the names of quarterbacks who've started for the Chicago Bears in the last 5 years. And, you know, pick me a franchise guy. The first one I'm going to say is borderline, but we all know the issues with him. But after that, listen close. Jay Cutler. I like Jay Cutler. I do. If you've seen the YouTube videos, you see in behind me, I've got a kid's Cutler jersey because that's what I put my son in. I like Jay Cutler. He's not a franchise quarterback that can lead a team to a Super Bowl, obviously. He's the best of the bunch. Jimmy Clausen. Matt Barkley, Brian Hoyer, Mike Glennon, Mitch Trubisky, Chase Daniels, Nick Foles. That's eight quarterbacks that have started games for the Bears in the last 5 years. Okay, so that is 80 games. So they, on average, 10 games each, but we know that's not the case. 80 games, those are the eight starting quarterbacks. Pick one that you would trust to win you a game if you only had one game to play for your life. That's this week in the fix. You think you know, but do you really know? Find out the truth on Conspiracy. Incident one, we'll take a look at Michael Jordan's first retirement and if it was truly a retirement or was it a suspension? Here's an excerpt from that first article. In the early 90s, there wasn't a bigger global star than Michael Jordan. His face was known all over the world. Between 1991 and 93, he and his Chicago Bulls would win three straight NBA championships, and Jordan would be the finals MVP each time. In 1992, he led Team USA, known as the Dream Team, to Olympic gold. Things were perfect, but not really. There was a dark side to the world's basketball darling with the incredible shoes. It was well publicized that he loved to gamble. In 1992, in fact, he was called to the stand to explain his involvement with convicted cocaine dealer James Slim Buehler. Jordan had written him a check for $57,000, which he claimed was a loan, but then testified it was to cover a gambling loss that occurred while the two were golfing. Buehler would claim that Jordan had lost even more throughout the years. Conspiracy takes us through everything that we know about the death of Michael Jordan's dad, Michael Jordan's well-publicized gambling, and the theories behind whether it was a suspension or retirement to play baseball. So remember to check out sportsfluent.com for Conspiracy.